20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Welcome back to another episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. You can get all your Pack-A-Day updates by following us on Twitter at Pack-A-Day Podcast. And remember, you can always subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, or Spotify. And, of course, you can check us out over at CheeseheadTV.com. I'm Kyle Fellows, and I am joined by Andrew Mertig, as always. And we are back for another Friday edition of the podcast. Andrew, it's good to be back. How are you doing?
Well, this is the way I sound now, Kyle. I'm a little rough. I have been sick since last weekend. I have been self-quarantined, and so I'm appreciative that I'm well enough to record tonight, and I'm really thankful that there was some free agency news this week to help me pass the time a little bit, but hoping to feel a little bit better in the coming days.
Yeah, sorry you're under the weather then, man. That's not fun. Plenty of extra time to get into the NFL draft and work on those prospects as we get into this even more. It sounds like you've gotten some good work done on some draft prospects.
Absolutely.
That's good. All right, so we want to kick things off today by recapping quickly what the Packers have done in free agency thus far. We don't want to spend a ton of time here because the Pack-A-Day team has done a great job covering this all week long. But we know Andrew, our own Andrew here, and Dan Kotnick gave you guys that emergency pod to discuss the moves Green Bay made on Monday and did an awesome job with that. But going all the way back to Monday, the Packers did agree to terms with former Browns linebacker Christian Kirksey and former Lions and Ravens offensive tackle Rick Wagner. The Kirksey signing clearly marking the end of Blake Martinez's time in Green Bay, and the Wagner acquisition did the same for Brian Bulaga. But Andrew, how are you feeling about what the Packers have done already in this free agency period?
Well, I really like it. I know some people are going to say the Packers got a little bit worse this week, but considering the cap implications, they were likely to lose either Blake Martinez or Brian Bulaga and leave a big gap on the roster. So instead of just losing one and picking and choosing, they actually filled both positions with the same amount of money. It's scary to think that both these players have some injury concerns, but I've read a lot of people that I really respect who don't think Rick Wagner is much of a step down from Bulaga. And certainly if Kirksey was healthy, he'd be looking at a similar contract to the one Blake Martinez got. So it is two contracts they can definitely get out of after a year if they don't work out. But if they do, they're really great value. So I like what they did.
Yeah, this was clearly not the opening to free agency that we had so much fun with last offseason with the Smith brothers, Adrian Amos, and Billy Turner being added. But these are some really solid moves that we've made, I think. I've said all offseason that I really wanted Brian Bulaga back. And I really do think that they may regret letting him leave. But that's a separate issue entirely from the Rick Wagner signing because his contract is not regrettable at all. His deal is so affordable, it's almost laughable. And as Andrew said, it's basically a one-year deal with team option in year two. But let's get into some more recent news. Late Wednesday night, we learned that the Packers had agreed to a one-year $2.25 million deal to bring back tight end Mercedes Lewis. And this is a move that many kind of had speculated would happen, but it's a move that probably increased a little bit when Green Bay did not sign Austin Hooper or anybody else at the top of the tight end market. But it's safe to say it was far from a sure thing that they were going to do this. So, Andrew, what are your thoughts on Lewis coming back to the Pack on this one-year deal?
Yeah, I think it's fine. He obviously is a really good run blocker and someone who can be relied on in checkdown situations. I don't think it's something that I'm going to get excited about. I'd much rather take a chance on a younger guy, but we know Matt LaFleur is going to value guys who can block. He's going to value them a lot, and certainly Lewis proved valuable in that role last season. So as a role player under this contract, for me, it's okay.
Yeah, I actually really love this move. The price tag is right, and he absolutely still gives you the impact you want in the running game as a blocker. And Rodgers really came to like him as a receiver last year as well. And so it's not like this is a long-term addition for this team. This is a Band-Aid kind of a move, and it's about leadership and a veteran presence and about having a really good blocking tight end in place, as you said. And Lewis played 542 snaps for the Packers last season and was the seventh highest graded run blocking tight end in the game last season among those who played enough snaps to qualify for Pro Football Focus. Jimmy Graham only played over 100, just around 100 snaps more than Mercedes Lewis last season. So the Packers clearly value what Lewis brought to the offense in 2019. And so I'm excited that he's back. Andrew, are you okay if we just kind of go off on a little bit of a rabbit trail here? That's probably going to take us completely off track here.
Yeah, sure. My brain doesn't work linearly in a linear fashion anymore. I can't even talk. This is going to be a great podcast.
I thought you were going to say your brain doesn't work literally. And I was like, well, that's concerning.
It may not either. I don't know.
Andrew's brain literally doesn't work is what he's telling us. but I was going to ask you, what are your thoughts on Jimmy Graham going to the Bears?
So you want to talk about James Graham? Okay. Jimmy Graham isn't as bad as people made him out to be. He's solid. I don't understand why the Bears have chosen to spend more money at the tight end position than any other team in the NFL. But I think he'll work in their scheme as a reliable target over the middle who really isn't able to make things happen after he makes the catch at this point in his career. But when you look at where Nick Foles has been successful, I think this move makes a lot more sense once you add in the trade for Nick Foles than if you were looking at Mitch Trubisky. Although with Trubisky, it does make sense to get a 6'7 target because you're going to need all of that 6'7 with the inaccuracy of one Mitchell.
Absolutely. That catch radius can go a long way with someone like Mitch Trubisky. But my best friend is a big Chicago Bears fan. And so we were texting a little bit about Nick Foles and Jimmy Graham came up. And he told me that Chicago, and maybe and this is just like the sports, you know, media is saying this, they're selling the Jimmy Graham signing as this. They're intending that Trey Burton remains tight end one and kind of regain some of that chemistry that he had with Foles in Philly in 2017. And then they are saying that Jimmy Graham is the aging player who can come in and kind of be tight end two and be an impact run blocker and be a threat in the receiving game from time to time, kind of that supplemental guy. And so I texted my friend back in the most respectful way possible and said, buddy, I've got some really bad news for you about Jimmy Graham and the words impact blocker. And so I have no idea what Chicago is thinking, but man, at least the sports media in Chicago is talking about how he's a high floor player, at least as a blocker, which is absolutely hilarious to me because it's just not the kind of player he is. But I'm with you. Jimmy Graham is a solid player. He's just not a player you want to pay as much as the Packers did or the Bears, you know, the amount that they're paying him now. But yeah, super, super interesting to see how he's going to end up fitting into that offense and with a new quarterback at the helm in Chicago as well. But that's my rabbit trail. Had to get off on Jimmy Graham for just a second there. But let's get back on track, talk about the Packers offseason. And let's go ahead and look at some names that, as of late Thursday night, are still available that could interest the Packers. I got a couple names, Andrew, but I'm curious who you're kind of keeping your eye on at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to start out with the big names, and these probably aren't the most realistic, but, you know, you have wide receiver Robbie Anderson, you have edge Jadeveon Clowney, there's defense alignment Shelby Harris, Derek Wolf, Ndamukong Suh. I know the popular take is that Robbie Anderson has priced himself out of the Packers range, but with the trade of DeAndre Hopkins and Stephon Diggs, and then you have this obscenely deep draft class at wide receiver, the market for Robbie Anderson doesn't seem as strong as it once did, and I would say that while this is extremely unlikely, maybe he would consider a one-year prove-it deal if he can't get the big contract he's looking for, or the Packers could potentially backload a deal for Robbie Anderson. Clowney is, like, there's almost a 0% chance of this happening, but he wants a ton of money, but he's in a position that isn't of need. Again, he could look to find a contender for a one-year prove-it deal, and Green Bay would make things much easier for him with the weapons that would be able to be put around him. They don't really have the cap space this season to make a big one-year deal work. So, I mean, it's a name to watch, but I don't think there's going to be anybody connecting him with Green Bay. Although things, wilder things have happened. If you heard this supposed Yannick Ngakoue trade rumor to Green Bay, which like doesn't make any sense based on their cap situation, but whatever. But there's a bunch of good defensive linemen still available. And I said on the emergency podcast on Monday, I think defensive line becomes the number one area of need at this point. So I talked about Shelby Harris and Derek Wolfe. They're both from the Broncos. They both provide more pass rush punch than the Packers currently have at from their linemen. So they'd be nice complementary pieces to Kenny Clark. Sue is another player who is unlikely. Like, quite frankly, he should just go back to Tampa at this point with Brady and the talent that they're going to have.
There you go, yeah.
His market may dry up a little bit. So, you know, there's some interesting defensive linemen out there at a minimum.
Yeah, I'm really curious about what Robbie Anderson is going to do in this market, because there obviously isn't the market that he thought that there was going to be when things got kicked off with free agency. And I do think that there could be a bargain bin kind of defensive tackle that Green Bay may want to snatch up as the money starts to dry up around the league. Snacks Harrison is another guy that could be had at a pretty good price that I think could certainly come in and play an impact role for this team for sure.
What about Taylor Gabriel?
You know, I really like that idea, and I don't know what his market is going to be and how expensive he's going to be, but I think he's a player that obviously has familiarity with Matt LaFleur and could come in and really kind of put Green Bay in a position to wait on receiver if there's a better option in the first round. So I wouldn't be opposed to it, not knowing exactly what that's going to cost.
Yeah, I noticed that both of us left him off the list, but he would be the most likely of somebody that could come in and play that slot receiver and certainly understands the way Matt LaFleur is going to run the team from the time when LaFleur was the quarterback's coach in Atlanta.
Yeah, definitely an intriguing option. And I don't know, again, like he may be a guy who doesn't sign for, you know, several days or into next week or those kinds of things. But I do like the flexibility that he would give this team to not really have to do something in receiver if they didn't want to. But I'm curious, you know, we've added Mercedes Lewis back into the fold. But if the price is right, do you think that Green Bay could still be in the market to add another tight end?
Well, if I was going to add another tight end to this Green Bay roster, for me, it's pretty easy. It'd be Eric Ebron. I actually became a much bigger fan of him this week because he was actually going out and trashing Lions fans on Twitter. He had replied to a comment about somebody connecting him to Green Bay and saying, like, so, it's something about Rodgers, like, go out and get me. And then a Lions fan had responded about, you know, I know I'm a Lions fan, but you know, Eric Ebron doesn't catch anything. And Ebron responded to him. He's like, you should have just stopped after I'm a Lions fan. So, yeah, like he doesn't have great hands. These are factual things. He does get hurt a lot. But when he is healthy, he is super dynamic. He actually gets open, which is a novel idea for a tight end, and is a huge run after the catch threat. So I would love for the Packers to pick him up because he'd add a dimension to their offense that they really have not had since JerMichael Finley.
Yeah, totally different kind of tight end than the guys who are currently on the roster. So you could totally see them kind of making that move if the price was right. A lot of these players, Eric Ebron included, they don't seem like moves that the Packers would make necessarily. But the further we get into free agency and the cheaper they become, they could certainly become bargains. And Ebron would certainly add that weapon to this offense, like you said. Delanie Walker is another name that has been connected to Green Bay, another aging vet. I believe he's 36, so he's probably a one-year contract that wouldn't be too expensive. But with the Packers having added Mercedes Lewis back in the fold, I would say that the odds of them adding Walker probably go down. Doesn't eliminate the possibility, but Lewis coming back to play probably does, you know, shrink the odds of that. Adding two guys that are at the very end of their career would seem unlikely. And Sternberger needs the snaps at tight end so that he can grow into that tight end of the future. So unless Walker's primary goal is to just be on a contending team at a really cheap price, I think that we can expect that he probably signs somewhere, maybe like Indy, who's been connected to him. There are still some guys who could be dealt via trade, Andrew. We've heard the name Brandon Cooks come up again just today. So what do you think about Green Bay going after a guy like Cooks? And do you think that would be something that would be worth investing in as far as the draft capital would cost to get him?
Yeah, I would assume since the Rams are looking to shed some salary, Cooks would not cost much more than a mid-round pick, but there is no way Green Bay can fit Brandon Cooks under the salary cap without some additional moves. So, you know, potentially you could move on. You could trade Lane Taylor to the Rams and maybe include a late pick if you had to for Cooks, but I don't know why the Rams would take on any more salary if they're looking to dump contracts. I guess they do sort of need O-line help, but... it's a really fun move because Cooks provides everything you need to complement Devontae Adams, but I think the price tag is just too much. But from a compensation standpoint, probably not much as the Rams just tried to get something back for Todd Gurley and then obviously ended up having to just bite the bullet and cut him.
Yeah, I mean, if you can get Brandon Cooks for a fourth round pick, I mean, that would be an incredible talent and would solve the huge opening on this roster. But as you said, just trying to figure out how to get that salary under our cap situation would definitely be probably a stretch at this point, but we've seen more creative things done, and Russ Ball is kind of a wizard there, so you never know. We'll have to see what develops with Brandon Cooks and his market. But so we've surveyed the Packers' moves up to this point and explored some other things that might still be in the works, but as of today, Andrew, how do you feel that all these moves impact the Packers' plan as it is that we move towards the draft and the way that they will need to fill the rest of this roster out?
This is going to be a weird answer, but honestly, I don't think it impacts it at all. You still have to draft the best player available. If a top four offensive tackle falls to you at pick 30, you take them. If you have Kenneth Murray or Patrick Queen as players that Goot absolutely loves, you still draft them. I'm less optimistic that the right wide receiver is going to be there at 30, because the more you look at it, the more wide receiver needy teams in front of the Packers keep continuing to pop up. But if someone like Justin Jefferson falls, you take them. I think their free agency has made right tackle and linebacker less pressing concerns, but you still have to boost those areas in the draft if it falls that way.
Yeah, I completely agree. And while sometimes it's nice to throw money at a free agent so that you can cross that position off your list, the Packers probably knew that they didn't have the money to really do that. So adding Lewis back in, adding Wagner at right tackle, and adding Kirksey, they kind of put themselves in a place of ultimate flexibility. They probably still need to add at all of the spots, like you said, but there's no longer such this huge hole that they have to press the issue. The only position on the roster that screams vacancy at this point is wide receiver. And so I'm curious if they're going to leave it that way or if they'll add a guy like we kind of talked about, Taylor Gabriel, or make a trade so that they're not feeling the need to even force that pick at wide receiver. But I really like what the Packers have done to position themselves to be open to the best player available and get the best value they can in this upcoming draft.
So we wanted to switch gears a little bit. This is a lot of free agency talk, and obviously the podcast has been pretty focused on that all week. And so we wanted to talk about the draft a little bit. Obviously, that's your and my favorite area of the offseason. And one of the things that I've been doing is, you know, looking at, obviously, the prospects in the upcoming draft. And I've been ranking them, and not only do I give them a film grade and then do a traditional ranking, but this week I've posted a couple of different positions, actually a few now, and given my thoughts on what would actually be the priority of Brian Gutekunst. So what I'm doing is I'm taking my film grade and I'm applying some filters to it. So we're taking a look at really emphasizing younger players, which Brian Gutekunst has shown. Typically, he is going to favor the younger players, and then also high relative athletic scores. And so the first position that I wanted to talk about tonight was my running back rating. So I threw 10 running backs out there. And I actually had Jonathan Taylor from Wisconsin number one, and that's going to be a little bit controversial because I know how people like to bash folks who connect Badgers to Green Bay. But given his age and his elite athletic traits, at least the measurable portions of those, it does make sense that the Packers may actually favor him. I have J.K. Dobbins from Ohio State, Cam Akers from Florida State, DeAndre Swift from Georgia. That's going to be kind of controversial because a lot of people have him as their number one, and I put him as number four. Antonio Gibson from Memphis, Clyde Edwards-Helaire from LSU, A.J. Dillon from Boston College, personal draft crush of mine, Darrington Evans from Appalachian State, Eno Benjamin from Arizona State, and LaMichael Perine from Florida.
So if I can, I just want to ask you really quick about, you know, a couple of these guys, because Matt LaFleur has openly said that they would like to add a third guy at running back, which is kind of bad news for Dexter Williams after he was just drafted last year. I don't know what I see as far as Green Bay being willing to go running back early in this draft. I personally hope that they don't. I think they've got needs at a lot of other places. But I've seen a lot of buzz around Darrington Evans. So what do you see in Evans, and where would you feel like he would be a value in the draft? I know you've got him listed here at number 8 in your rankings, but where's a good spot to draft him?
Yeah, I think he has really good field vision. He has the ability to make defenders miss. It's sort of a slight frame, so he's not going to push defenders forward or hold up really well in pass protection, but he does have natural hands. He wasn't asked to run a lot of routes at Appalachian State, but he has the fluidity to learn. And in the meantime, he can just simply be a really nice checkdown guy. For me, I have him as the 56th best offensive prospect based on what the Packers' preferences are in drafting. But I'd like to think that he could be drafted in the 4th or 5th round, or maybe even later, knowing the positional value of running backs and how he could slide. So he might be that nice late-round pick. I know they use a 6th on Dexter. And so, you know, right in that 5th and 6th round, I think would be the sweet spot to get good value. He also is only 21 years old, and he has a 9.1 RAS score. So Goody's going to like that.
Yeah. That absolutely screams Brian Gutekunst in a match there. But a man like Antonio Gibson is super interesting to me. He's listed as your running back 5, but he's kind of a wide receiver, isn't he? He's listed in your running back ratings here. How do you see him fitting, and do you see him as a running back?
Yeah, I have a big draft crush on Antonio Gibson. I think I tweeted as much last week. The fact is, when I calculated in his age, he's 22, but he also has a 9.29 RAS score. That actually vaulted him ahead of Clyde Edwards-Helaire in my prospect ranking, which is not going to be very popular. But yeah, he did. You're exactly right. He played more wide receiver in college than he did running back, but he is definitely a running back at the next level. He's built like a running back. And quite frankly, his skill set at wide receiver doesn't translate well to the program, but I love this dude. He's a super intriguing package of both a big physical runner. You'd think he played wide receiver, so he'd be a slight frame, but he's not. He's a well-built guy. But he also, of course, has that receiving threat. And the bonus is, because he played so much at wide receiver, he has almost no tread on his tires from an impact standpoint. So he's not taking that punishment between the tackles like a lot of running backs do, you know, like Jonathan Taylor, for instance. I have him as my 37th rated offensive prospect based on the Packers' preferences, but clearly I'm way higher on him than probably anybody else is. I'd take him in the late 3rd, honestly. Wow, I think he's that good and that impactful, but he's probably going to get drafted in the 4th. I think, you know, if he slid into the 5th, it wouldn't be a super big surprise to me. So I think anywhere in that 4th to 5th round, you're starting to get a really good value.
Yeah, that's really cool. And we talk about Laviska Shenault a lot on this podcast because we know that we differ on him just a little bit. But I've also talked about how he's that offensive weapon kind of player, regardless of if you're using him out of the backfield or getting him in on, you know, quick completions and letting him do run after the catch stuff. But so I'd be interested in a player like Gibson, if you miss out on a player like Shenault early in the draft, somebody who could give you some of that quick game, you know, run after the catch, maybe some slot stuff as a running back receiver kind of combo offensive weapon. So I've seen him a little bit and was really, really intrigued. And so when he popped up as number 5 on your list, that made me even more excited to kind of dig into him a little bit more. We've been talking about running backs. We've kind of like talked about a guy who's kind of a running back and a receiver. Do you have time to go through some of your actual like receiver rankings here?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And one thing that I just wanted to add onto the point that you just made, I think sometimes people get really infatuated with a particular prospect. Shenault's a great example. Like maybe you can get a player with a very similar skill set later on, like Antonio Gibson. I know, you know, I've been listening to a lot of the draft dudes as well. And one of the points that Kyle Krabs was making on their show was, yes, Isaiah Simmons is a unicorn. And it's super fantastic to get a guy like him. But if you have a position of need, like tackle or quarterback or other things that you're not going to get later in the draft, it may not be bad to just take a guy like a Jeremy Chinn, who has a very similar skill set, but maybe isn't as highly thought of, but you can get a better value later on. Not the same player, but you're investing a lot less draft capital in acquiring that player. And so it allows you to address some other needs. And I think Gibson would provide, you know, a really unique dynamic skill set for this Matt LaFleur offense. So yeah, anyways, back to what you actually asked me. So my top 15 wide receivers, and again, this is adjusted. So my film grades look a little bit different than this, but this is what I think the Packers would prefer. I have CeeDee Lamb, number one. That's no surprise. Henry Ruggs, the third. Two, Justin Jefferson from LSU is my third ranked receiver, but that's just because he's such an elite athlete, just crazy. And he combines really good route running and hands. Jerry Jeudy from Alabama is number four. If you would have told me that a few weeks ago, I would have called myself crazy. I have LaVisca Chenault as five, Brandon Ayuk six, Jalen Reagor from TCU seven. Actually, Donovan Peoples-Jones from Michigan at eight, KJ Hamler from Penn State nine, Tyler Johnson at 10, Van Jefferson, T. Higgins, Chase Claypool, Denzel Mims, Devin Duvernay. You just want to listen to me list off names on the podcast. That sounds like a lot of fun. But so that's my ranking. You can check those out on Twitter too.
I think we see this wide receiver class pretty similarly outside of this few exceptions. I like Mims and Pittman more than you, and you like Chenault more than I do. But I'm interested in your thoughts on Tyler Johnson, Andrew, because when I watched the film, and I haven't watched a ton of Tyler Johnson, just a little bit, but I had a hard time getting a feel for how I feel like he'd project to the NFL and exactly what kind of a player he's going to be and if he can make that transition seamlessly as some of these other guys. But what is it about Johnson that has him above Higgins and guys like Denzel Mims for you?
Yeah, and that's a fascinating thing I think about draft prospects in general, is that different people can take a look at the same prospect and kind of come away with different things. We all have our own biases. We all have our own preferences in what a prospect brings. But for me, Tyler Johnson is just a really smooth route runner. He largely catches everything. I think his transition to the NFL is going to be really easy. For me, Higgins struggles mightily to get separated. So yeah, he has a great catch radius. He's a really good contested catcher. But if he can't get open in college, what's that going to look like in the pros with corners that have better ball skills? And for me, Mims combine athleticism just frankly doesn't show up on tape at all for me. And he combines that with not being a very good route runner, which are two things that scare me to death. Higgins had a really poor RAS score, which I think destroyed his rating in the formula that I was using. That's why I saw him slide so much. And maybe the Packers don't like that. I mean, historically, they haven't drafted guys with RAS scores anywhere near what T. Higgins has. Denzel Mims had a significantly worse film grade, so his ridiculous RAS score couldn't quite make up for Tyler Johnson being a little bit more balanced in both areas. He's a much better player on Saturdays for me, and he's only 21 years old, and I liked all of those things about Tyler Johnson.
Yeah, this is definitely a really, really good class of receivers, and it's going to be fun to see who Green Bay comes away with when we do get to April. So many choices, so much depth, and so it'll be interesting to see if they grab one, if they grab a couple, and you know, just to see how they incorporate to this offense with Matt LaFleur. But we did get some news that broke just before we started the podcast tonight about Clay Matthews and his availability. He's been released by the LA Rams. And so there's a lot of buzz around Twitter about Clay Matthews and a reunion. Players have weighed in from the Green Bay Packers, liking tweets and even retweeting tweets about Clay Matthews and reunion with the Packers. So, Andrew, do you have any thoughts on Mr. Clay Matthews coming back to Green Bay?
In 1 year, did everybody forget how Clay Matthews was? Like, this is the same guy who over-pursued everything and gave up so many big plays because he was always trying to make the big play. I hard pass for me. I love Clay Matthews. I'll always be appreciative of him. He was a top-notch defensive player for a significant stretch. He was one of the main reasons why they won the Super Bowl in 2010. But no, he's just not a good fit. And the player that he's become in his older age doesn't work for me. And I don't think that Mike Pettine would really want him around this defense.
Okay, so I'm going to play devil's advocate just a little bit, because my initial response is pretty much exactly your perspective, and I think that that's how I feel. I feel like this team needs to get younger, move on, get more athletic, and not just try to plug holes with aging guys who we kind of know exactly what the trajectory of their career is. Okay, so devil's advocate, though, is Clay Matthews can come in, can be maybe an inside linebacker kind of a player who could play beside a guy like Christian Kirksey, right? And play limited downs, because we know that at least lately Pettine hasn't played as many two linebacker sets, although I know that you disagree with his desire to do that and would like to get more linebackers on the field. Okay, so in theory, he plays limited snaps at inside linebacker, but he also gives you flexibility to be your fourth edge rusher. Now that we've lost your favorite man, oh my gosh,
Kyler Fackrell.
He's already gone from my mind. I've already moved on. Kyler Fackrell.
Blake in New York. That's pretty exciting.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. It's cool that they get to stay together. But Fackrell's out, and so you know you kind of could use that rotational fourth guy. So in theory, Clay Matthews could spend some time on the inside. He could also be your fourth edge rusher, which would maybe free up a roster spot if he could do a little bit of both. So that would be my devil's advocate for Clay Matthews.
Yep. Okay. I'm gonna lay out a visual for you here, Kyle. Okay. Week one of the 2020 NFL season, the Packers are playing the 49ers, and you know, close game. Packers offense plays really efficiently, is moving the ball against that San Francisco defense. The Packers defense is holding San Francisco relatively in check. One possession game, Packers up 3. You know, and 49ers have the ball, and they run a stretch play. Clay Matthews dives through the gap, vacating the lane that he's supposed to be covering, and the San Francisco running back goes 60 yards for a touchdown. That's exactly what's going to happen. No,
that was a really nice visual.
Hard pass.
I liked all of the details about how we were holding our own against the Niners, and then it fell apart there. So, I'm with you.
You know who makes that play? Kenneth Murray.
With the 30th pick.
I'm done with the podcast.
In the 2020 NFL draft, Packers select Kenneth Murray. Okay, yeah.
We should talk about Will Redmond, though.
Yeah, Will Redmond.
Speaking of players who will actually be on the Green Bay roster next year.
Yeah, blockbuster news here. Will Redmond is back with the Packers. Core special teamer, you know, impact guy there. He's going to have to earn his spot, certainly, but the Packers obviously like what he brings to the special teams unit. You have any other thoughts, Andrew, on Will Redmond making his return?
Yeah, he is a really good special teams player, and I think backup safety is a highly undervalued position, but in the Mike Pettine scheme, you're going to see a lot of three safeties, and having a guy like Will Redmond who's experienced is going to be really important. So I really like this move. To me, it's you know, it's certainly not flashy, but it's something that I think is going to help this team out.
Yeah, it's cheap, and it's these deals that don't cost very much that fill out the depth of this team. And I think, I mean, we've seen the Packers struggle with special teams for a long, long time. And I think that making sure that you get the guys that you know are valuable to that unit back, and you don't just deplete it for the sake of saving a little bit of money, is really important. So getting guys like that are underrated moves that nobody's going to talk about and get excited about. But getting guys like that back is absolutely huge. But one more note on Clay Matthews. We're talking about money too, right? Andrew hangs his head. He's like, do not bring up Clay Matthews one more time on this podcast. We're talking about money, because he's not going to sign a deal for less than $4, 5, 6 million, even if it's a 1 or 2 year deal. And I would much, much rather sink that money into a player like Taylor Gabriel, who's going to add a different dynamic to your team than what Clay Matthews can offer. And so for me, it comes down to the dollars, too. I would just say, you know, we can invest that money much more wisely than a guy with a big name like Clay Matthews is going to offer to this team. So lots is going to happen in the coming days. We don't know, but it's going to be fun to see what the Packers do at this second wave of free agency.
I'm all for bringing Clay Matthews back to enshrine him into the Packers Hall of Fame, but not as a player. But that is all the time that we have for today. This has been the Pack-A-Day Podcast. You can find Kyle on Twitter at Packer_Pundit, and you can find me at Andrew Mertig. Please remember to also follow at Pack-A-Day Podcast. podcast. Whoa, almost screwed that one up. Please subscribe and rate the podcast if you like what we're doing. Everybody, please stay healthy. You don't want to end up sounding like me. Good luck in your quarantine. Hopefully we can be a little bit of helping you to pass some time if you're either at work or commuting, or if you're stuck at home. Hopefully we can brighten your day just a little bit. But you can catch Kyle and myself every single Friday. We're going to be back next week with a very special guest to talk NFL draft. Thanks for listening. And as always, remember...